This is Juno Afternoon. I'm Shelley Delaney. In this Friday's UAS Evening at Egan lecture series, my first guest will talk about the Alaska Native Success Initiative and their work in making the University of Alaska system a more welcoming environment for Native students. Joining us now is Ronalda Cadiente Brown. Hi, Ronalda.
Hi, good afternoon. Thank you for having me.
And Pearl Brower. Hello, Pearl.
Hi, Shelley. Good afternoon.
Ronaldo, let's start with you. Would you please introduce yourself and talk a little bit about your role in this initiative?
Yes, thank you. I've been with the university for 10 years now, born and raised here in Juneau. This is home. And prior to working at the university, I worked with the Juneau School District. The role that I'm in now is Associate Vice Chancellor for Alaska Native Programs, and I also oversee the PETAS program, preparing Indigenous teachers and administrators for Alaska schools. I am of Tlingit and Filipino heritage on my mother's side. I carry the name Antakaot and Kunak, part of the Tekwaiti Brown Bear Clan of Angoon. And then on my father's side, he immigrated to the United States from the Northern Philippines. He was Ilocano. Raised a large family here, and the Cadiente name is something I carry that I'm very proud of. In terms of what I'm bringing with this work is leading the Alaska Native Success Initiative for UAS.
Thank you, Ronalda. And Pearl Brower, would you please introduce yourself and tell us about your role as well?
Absolutely. Good afternoon, everyone. Ovanga Narayak, Tinikton Sinaga, Dr. Pearl Kion Brower. Utkeaving Miurunga, Kove Suktunga Mangi Uvlupak. So, good afternoon, everyone. My Inupiaq name is Narayak. My English name is Dr. Pearl Brower, and I am originally from the community of Utkeaqavik, or otherwise known as Barrow. And I'm really very excited to be here today. I am calling in from Anchorage. I am about 3 months in now to working for the University of Alaska. I work in the system office for interim president Pat Pitney. My official title is the Senior Advisor for Alaska Native Success, Institutional Diversity, and Student Engagement. And I've entered into this space working with all the universities on the Alaska Native Success Initiative. Prior to this work with the university, I served for 13 years a member of Ilisakovit College, Alaska's only tribal college. I served as 8 years as president.
I'm so glad to have both of you here with me today, and this is a really big topic. So I just wanted to start off with a question about the Alaska Native Success Initiative. It was established about a year ago, is that correct? But can you tell me a little bit about how it came to be and maybe what makes it different from previous efforts?
I guess I would wonder if there has ever been a previous effort. First off, the work came from a response out of concern with the loss of Indigenous faculty and a concern that we were not adequately serving our Alaska Native population. And I think the ANCSA corporation representatives that stepped forward shared that concern. And so it began with a conversation with the Board of Regents, with the university president's office, and evolved to the Board of Regents for an action to dive into a deeper review of how well we're serving our Alaska Native populations.
Pearl, would you add anything to that?
No, I think what I would, the piece I would add is that at last year's November 2020 Board of Regents meeting, the resolution was passed in an effort to address these inequalities and these the issues that have been seen throughout the University of Alaska system. And so this last year has really been the planning stage for implementation for the strategic plan. And we will be presenting the strategic plan to the Board of Regents tomorrow in expectation they will pass it. And now we will kind of enter into now this, I would think of it as kind of the stage, the second stage, implementation plan and actual making, starting to make things happen.
The strategic plan must have been a huge undertaking. I've been a part of these planning things myself, but this month the initiative published their 5-year strategic plan, and it's about a year to the date after the initiative was established. What was that experience like for both of you, the process of developing this strategic plan?
For the University of Alaska Southeast, I was invited to lead the initiative for UAS. And so what that began with was reaching out to Alaska Native organizations for representation, as well as internally within our organization. And that all took place in late January, early February. I have just a phenomenal group of individuals that stepped up to accept the invitation. And we have representatives of Gloria Burns from the Tribal Council, as Tribal Council President of Ketchikan Indian Community, Dion Kediente Leidy, Tribal Education Programs Director for Douglas Indian Association, Joe Nelson, Chairman of the Board, Sea Alaska Corporation, and he's also served on the UA-wide Steering Committee, and President Richard Peterson of Central Council Pink and Haida Indian Tribes of Alaska, and he's also on the Steering Committee. And then from the UAS campus, myself, faculty members, Misha Jackson with the School of Education, Pune Lance Twitchell with Alaska Native Studies, and Louise Brady and Sarah Tomchuk representing the UAS Sitka campus staff, and Danielle Carlson, our rural admissions counselor. I bring their names forward because they dedicated a lot of their precious time to this initiative. For UAS, we were actually meeting weekly throughout the spring to begin the process of review. And what that looked like for us was that we began with conversation. What were our individual perceptions and areas of interest? And then evolved into looking at system data and looking at systems in general for what would that ideal be and what areas or gaps might exist. And so it was a very long, intense practice, and then coupling that with the UA Steering Committee. So there were hours upon hours of time and thought that went into the final product that has been shared with you.
And Pearl, how about yourself? What was it like for you to be a part of the strategic plan over the last year?
Well, I've gotten to come into it after so much energy and work, as Rinalda has mentioned, just so much appreciation for all three campuses and the steering committee, who has dedicated so much time and energy to this work. I started in August and was given kind of the task that in November, we need to present to the regents. And so I just give a lot of appreciation to the action team leads, Rinalda and Joe from UAS, and our other action team leads from our other universities, who really helped steer the conversation and the topics around the strategic plan. And it's just been a real, I've just had a lot of appreciation for all of the work that has been done before, and a sense of great hope for the work that will be done as we move into the future. But I really got to come into a space that a lot of work had already been done, and we were able to put it all together as a group and move it forward.
I'm wondering if either of you would like to speak to some of the priorities that are outlined in the strategic plan, perhaps the ones that will be top of the list as you move forward.
Rinalda, do you want to speak to UAS's, and then I can speak to a couple of the system-wide?
Mm-hmm. I'd be happy to. There are some some, I guess, not surprising interest areas that we all share, and that being how increasing the numbers, and how do we begin to do that, the numbers of faculty, Indigenous faculty, Indigenous staff, and then around our students, how do we attract and retain students from start to finish as they step onto campus for that new experience, and then the supports that are offered that are addressing their needs. Our overall vision, or perhaps my vision, would be that we are assisting in preparing our students for active engagement within their communities. And those two areas, I'd say, are the most pressing. And certainly for our challenges around the pandemic of how do you hold on to students. And we have, for the UAS campus, we have a population of 20% Alaska Native students. We have a smaller percentage of Native faculty and staff. I think we're at 7% looking at the 2020 data of Indigenous faculty, and 11% staff, and we'd like to increase that. So there are a variety of initiatives, Grow Your Own. How well are we doing in the areas of personnel and enticing, attracting new faculty and staff? For myself, the University of Alaska Southeast has just been a really rich, wonderful work experience. There are many just fabulous individuals who work there, and how can we build on that environment? And then around student interests, you know, we contribute greatly to the economic development of our region, and how can we stay in tune with the market interests to better prepare our students. And so with that, I think there's a desire for better onboarding of new faculty and staff, and orientation of students. I mean, how can we enrich it with what we know from each of our regions and our state of how amazingly beautiful our Indigenous cultures are, and that we want them better represented in this formal educational setting.
I'll just add in, each university is really focused on students and faculty and staff, and the feeling of the university when, and then the system office took a broad look at kind of more the 360 view of how we can support the effort. A few of the items that are most important is implementing, developing, designing, and implementing a training that is really focused on racial equity and cultural safety, the need for that to be implemented across the whole system, but in a really a really intentional way of doing that, so that we're not just checking a box, we're actually really engaging in the work that needs to happen. On the system side, we really want to work on engaging our community, the community coming into our university as a whole system, and us coming out and being a part of the community. So a real two-way communication and relationship. And then how do we develop a sustainability model for this work that continues to move forward into the future? And how do we support the really important aspects of Alaska Native language learning across the entire system? So some really great and exciting, very important initiatives that are coming down the pike in the next year. Hmm.
If you're just joining me, I'm speaking with Renalda Caliente Brown and Pearl Brower, co-presenters for this Friday's Evening at Egan lecture. What will you be covering in your talk this Friday?
I think it will be a combination of updates. We've had, through the development of the plan, a lot of opportunities to share with our constituents. And that includes the Faculty Senate, Faculty Alliance, you know, the organizational groups of staff, you know, the startup in fall with convocations. So we've been able to provide the big picture plan, if you will. And so this evening at Egan for this Friday at 7 o'clock, we are sharing some of the background for the general community about the plan and planning and our hopes and desires for how this initiative will impact the system as a whole. Our audience tends to be far-reaching, and we're interested in just sharing the information. And I think there's also a layer of accountability, what's been developed so far, and then what we would like to see. And that accountability in part will be, is captured in the report, is the reporting out annually of our progress.
And Pearl, would you add anything to that?
I'm just very excited, and I appreciate Rinalda for inviting me to be a part of it. And I'm very much looking forward to sharing and really engaging the community in meaningful ways. So thank you.
Well, thank you, Gunas Chish, to both of you for being here today to give us a preview of this week's Evening at Egan lecture. Rinalda Cadiente-Brown and Pearl Brower, they'll speak this Friday night at 7 o'clock, and you can go to uas.alaska.edu/Egan lecture for more information and to register to watch the talk. Anything that either of you would like to add before we say goodbye today?
We just appreciate the time and really see that the board of Regents adoption tomorrow that we're anticipating is really a kickoff to rolling up our sleeves and getting to work. And so what is that saying, that many hands enlighten the work, and anticipating that there'll be adjustments to the plan as we move forward and bring it to life, and anticipation that there'll be opportunity for more engagement at all levels. Mm. And I did want to footnote too, want to apologize. I missed listing too that we had student representatives as part of our group. And those students are Joe Hilaire, Lauren Framke, and Sarah Peel. And appreciate that they took time out of their busy schedules to join in the meetings and discussion as well. And I would close too by saying, Gunal Sheesh, thank you for the time this afternoon.
Thanks to you both. What a big effort. And good luck with the talk this Friday.
Thank you.
Have a great afternoon. Support for Juno Afternoon comes from Heritage Coffee Roasting Company, providing Juno with locally roasted coffee for over 40 years with 7 cafes and drive-through locations throughout Juno. More at heritagecoffee.com. I'm your host, Shelley Delaney. Many in Juno will be happy to hear that Sue Douglas has been chosen by the Juno Community Foundation as Philanthropist of the Year. It's our pleasure to welcome her today. Sue Douglas, hello and congratulations.
Thank you, Shelley. Thank you very much. It's a pleasure to always be here.
And also on the call today, John Pugh, President of the Juno Community Foundation. Hi, John.
Hi, how are you, Shelley? Thanks for having us today.
Thank you for being here. I'm well, thanks. Sue, let's start with you. What does it mean to be a philanthropist? How did this come to be part of who you are?
Well, first of all, last night was a lovely celebration where lots of people joined in. And that's some of what we talked about was, what does it mean to be a philanthropist? There's people kind of automatically assume it means you need to be a rich person with a lot of money. And that's not true at all. Of course, it's wonderful when people donate money to support causes that they care about and that are important to a community. We always need that. But there's other ways, too. I've always felt that philanthropy means being somebody who, in your own way, you contribute to the care of others. You are doing what you can to support the community, for example, in the best way you can. And so that could be volunteerism, that could be donating some of your special expertise, a professional service, in-kind services, as well as your money and a lot of your time. So to me, there's a broader definition than what a lot of people assume.
How did it feel to receive this honor?
Well, I'm following in the footsteps of I think, John, correct me, I think about 11 times the Community Foundation has honored people as Philanthropists of the Year. So I'm following in big footsteps behind many fine people who are great examples to us all. And so it feels wonderful. It feels, it's quite an honor. I'm very humbled, and I'm still just as excited as I'll get out over the big celebration last night, and happy to be able to talk about it.
Your work has focused on the people and programs that support our most vulnerable in the community, such as the Riverview Senior Living Project, the Glory Hall, and the Teal Street Center, and more. What are some of the accomplishments that you feel the most proud of?
Well, I'm proud of a former organization, a small nonprofit that was called Senior Citizen Support Services, Inc. That small nonprofit goes back many, many years and was responsible for getting Fireweed Place built many years ago, the apartment complex downtown that is for seniors who can live independently. So that group really spearheaded and stuck with an almost 11-year process to bring senior assisted care and housing to Juneau. And I worked with that group and stuck with it myself, and admire the folks that carried it along with me. And I think that's one of the proudest things that we've accomplished. It took a lot of, I guess you could say, tenacity to just stick with the project. And sure enough, it's under construction. It'll open in early 2023. It's out in the valley, located in Vintage Business Park along the Mendenhall River between Trillium Landing and True North Credit Union. It's just in a wonderful location. It's just going like gangbusters right now. And if we're fortunate, before the end of the year, there'll be a roof on it and construction will continue all winter. And we really will open early 2023.
That's great to hear. Sue, today also happens to be Public Radio Music Day, and you serve as the chair, among all your many things that you do, you serve as the chair of the KTO Legacy Foundation. So what are some of the reasons that you support public radio?
I've been a public radio supporter ever since I moved to Juneau in January of 1977, and it wasn't too long after that, maybe a couple of years, that I served on the board of directors. I was president of the board. I have stayed connected to K2 all these many years. I've worked there twice, maybe three times. No, I think twice. And I'm just a huge public fan. I'm a huge fan of public broadcasting in general. I can't imagine Juneau or this country without public broadcasting. I love the balanced reporting. I love the variety of the programming. I enjoy the people and the mindset about public broadcasting. And so it's a real easy thing to support. And I don't think my support will ever waver.
We appreciate that. John Pugh, turning to you now, I imagine you know Sue pretty well. What, over the time that you've known her, what has impressed you or inspired you? What has she accomplished that's impressed you or inspired you?
Well, for one thing, which I said last night, I felt from a standpoint of just viewing Sue and all she's done, particularly with the Juneau Community Foundation. She was one of the early adopters of that foundation. She helped really put, you know, was in the formative years, helped put it together, and served as the chair in 2010 of the Juneau Community Foundation and on for a few years after that. And it's one of those things where it seems to me that Sue has, she said tenacious, that's one good thing. But the other thing is she really looks at projects in the community, things that need to be done. And she says, okay, that's something that we really need in Juneau, or we really needed when she lived in Skagway and Skagway. And she doesn't wait for other people to jump aboard. She jumps in and then she gathers people around her and gets things done. The most recent thing that I've seen, and of course she gives credit to her husband, you know, particularly, you know, and as well, because he's working on his project as a Teal Street Center, or what we know as United Human Services. We just had a groundbreaking last week, and I showed up for that, was one of the shovelers for representing the Juneau Community Foundation. And you gotta, you know, of course you show up and there, who's at the front? And there she is, you know, Sue. She chaired the campaign. She's a campaign chair for that building, and they've raised over $4 million and, you know, for a building that's gonna be $6.5 million, but it'll be an amazing difference for Juneau. 8 different social or human service agencies in that building, and a 9th that has joined and said they will also put people there recently, Clinton Haida. And so it's just remarkable the kinds of things that she does. And as I say, it's a unique person who looks at their community and says, here's a need. Hey, let's go do something about it. Not everybody has that, you know, that kind of will, that kind of energy. And I just think that I admire her so much for all the different projects that she has done in the community. And I admire her, she and her husband, for the Douglas Dornan Foundation that they put together and what that does for, particularly for young people throughout Southeast. And again, the senior services support has been wonderful. And they not only finished that project, they now put that part, what was left of the money for that nonprofit, into the Juneau Community Foundation, and it started an endowment there to be able to serve for services of senior citizens in the future. And so, you know, you could go on and on in Sue's life and all the different things she's accomplished. But my big thing is it doesn't stop. What I'm sure next week she'll be thinking about what's the next thing we need to do here in Juneau. It never stops with Sue. And that's the thing that I really admire about her.
Well, it sounds like you had a wonderful celebration last night. The Juneau Community Foundation marked the occasion, presented her with the title Philanthropist of the Year. How was that? What all did that involve?
Well, we have in the past had a banquet every fall where we honored not only the Philanthropists of the Year, but frequently we've honored businesses or we've honored agencies that have significantly made a difference in our community, particularly with the mission that we have, which is to expand philanthropy and also to serve the needs of people in Juneau. And we haven't been able to do that the last 2 years. You know, last year we did have a celebration to honor John Gagin and all the stuff that he and his wife have done for the community as with a Founders Award. It was a little smaller than the one last night. We did that on Zoom last year, and this year we did it on Zoom again. And this year we had over 100 people participate in the Zoom, meeting last night or in the event. It was a wonderful event. We had 8 different speakers, 7 speakers kind of telling stories about Sue, and Jeff Larson, who gave the award, also adding some stories about Sue on there. And each and every one gave a little sort of snippet of a piece of Sue's life over the years. And it was just remarkable to listen to that and to have people just really honoring such a wonderful person. So it was a great event. And I think all the 100 plus people who were part of it felt that it really was a great event and a good way to honor somebody who's done so much for Juneau. And as I say, also for Skagway, where she lived and was the mayor and did a lot for Skagway as well.
Well, that sounds just really remarkable and very fitting. And congratulations, Sue. I'm sure you felt wonderful about that.
You did. Thank you so much.
And thanks to both of you. Go ahead, John. Okay, we just have a couple seconds.
Okay. Well, one thing is that Sue is, we have a matching fund of $40,000 that we put forward. And for Sue's, the things that Sue really likes, one of them is the Senior Support Services and the other is the Douglas Dornan Fund. So if people are interested in contributing and honoring Sue, those two things are the things she put forward as the funds to give to.
I really look forward to seeing what happens next. So congratulations to you, Sue Douglas, for this well-deserved honor. And thanks so much for all that you do. And John Pugh, thanks for coming on the show today to tell us about why the Juno Community Foundation chose Sue as the Philanthropist of the Year. It was great to talk to you both.
Thank you, Shelley.
Thanks, Shelley.
This is Juno Afternoon. I'm Shelley Delaney. As public radio stations across the country celebrate National Public Radio Music Day, we wanted to mark the occasion here on KTOO. So joining me now is Trish Turner Custard, a.k.a. DJ TC. Hello, Trish.
Hi, Shelley. Happy National Public Radio Music Day.
Thanks. Happy National Public Radio Music Day to you, too. And joining us shortly will also be the host of Stormy Weather and longtime public radio voice, Katie Bosler. Well, Trish, the pandemic certainly presented some challenges, but also opportunities to find creative ways to connect to our community through music. Our show hosts, who work on a volunteer basis, have been a huge part of that effort. So starting with you, when the pandemic hit, you were able to pivot to producing a show at home. What's that experience been like for you?
Well, it's been very interesting. It's been a huge learning curve. March 2020, literally my last show, went home and I got the email from you telling us that we're going into lockdown. And we kind of sat for a bit, and then we were able to, through Audacity software, produce our shows at home. And that was a little bit of a learning curve. I'd used Audacity before, but fitting everything into the time limits and being able so that you could put in the station breaks was interesting and was hard at first. But I have to say, I've really enjoyed doing it. I feel that it's broadened my abilities as a show host. I've put a lot more thought and effort into my shows. I've always put a lot of thought and effort into it, but I seem to have put more in during the time of the pandemic and during producing the shows at home, really trying to be cognizant of the listeners, giving them a broad range of music to listen to, not necessarily music that I might normally play, but knowing that our listeners were at home, we were in lockdown for a lot of the time, just giving them a variety of things to listen to and stringing it all together, making it a nice cohesive show.
Mm. And I have to say, your most recent show, which was a tribute to one of my all-time favorite artists, Prince, was just absolutely terrific. It was a real, like, only on local radio listening experience, and I loved it. What motivated you to keep going, even though it was, like, such a big effort to do your show from home?
Well, I just, you know, I've been doing it since 2010, and it's something that... it's a creative source for me. I find it really a creative outlet. And when the pandemic hit, you know, I needed something to keep my creativity going. I'm a writer by trade, but I also need other outlets for creativity, and doing the show is one. And when we had the ability to do it from home, even though it was difficult, even though it takes three times longer than just coming into the studio, it's something I wanted to do. I wanted to do it for myself, and I wanted to do it for our community.
What has been your relationship with public media over the last several years? You said you started in 2010. How did that all come to be, and what do you appreciate about public radio?
Well, we had just moved back to Juneau in 2010, and I heard an advertisement on the station that they were needing volunteers. So I came down to the station with the express intent to do anything except be on the air. I told Jeff Brown, I don't want to be on the air. That's not I just don't feel comfortable. And he would not take, I would do anything. You know, I'd dust, I'd answer phones, I would fly all CDs. I would not be on the air, but he would not accept that and shoved me into the studio with, I believe it was John Gagin to teach me how to do things. And it just went from there. And the thing that I love about the public radio music is the surprise. You listen to commercial radio, you know what you're going to hear. It's the same 40 songs over and over and over again. When I turn on KTOO, KRNN, KXL, I don't know what I'm going to hear, but I know that it's been handpicked for me. I'm probably going to like it. It's going to be things that are going to push my boundaries. It may not be things that I usually listen to, but I learned that I like it. It's great. It's surprising, and it's current, and it speaks to our community and what we want, what we need.
You've got a show coming up this Friday, 8 o'clock a.m. What can we expect to hear if we tune in?
Well, this week, because of the National Day that we're celebrating, I'm calling it my Radio Eclectica. So we're going to hear a little bit of everything. We're going to go to blues, to country, to jazz, to rock, to pop. So everything that we have here to give people at KRNN, going to give a little bit of it, a little bit of it in 2 hours of time.
Mm. I look forward to listening. Well, while many of our hosts like Trish are still producing their shows from home, this summer we were able to bring a small number of live hosts back into the studio, including Katie Bosler. Katie, what's it been like for you to be back on the air?
Fantastic. It's kind of, I think, it's not only a public service for the public and public radio, but also just kind of a therapy for me. I mean, I love music, and I mean, there's nothing like being in the studio and, you know, turning it up and playing it for the world, or your world, as it were, here in Juneau, Douglas, and people far afield online.
You have a long history here with local public media. What's important to you about hosting a music show on KRNN, hosting Stormy Weather?
Well, you know, it's sharing, like, you know, I think one of the things this National Public Radio Music Day, it's the second annual, and the philosophy behind this national effort is to celebrate all the music and all the artists that you hear nowhere but public radio. And that's what I love, is discovering new artists, not only locally, regionally, but across the country that I can share with listeners. And it never ceases to amaze me, to, as a writer, to use a cliche, to hear these new creations. And it's just such a privilege and an honor to share it with listeners.
What do you have planned for your show tonight?
Well, I host the Stormy Weather music show, radio show, with Carolyn Miner. Carolyn Miner is my friend and neighbor who just lives a couple doors up, and we alternate hosting. She has been hosting the program for, I should have found out, at least 15 years, if not more. I started alternating, sharing the show with her at least 10 years ago, if not more. And what I'm doing, and this is just a plea and a plug for those of you listening, I want this to be a public put together show, maybe a crowdsourced. So what I'm asking people to do is post on the Katie Bosler Facebook page, or you can call me tonight when I'm on the air between 9 and 11 at 586-1212, and tell me a song or an artist that you discovered on public radio, or that you hear on public radio that you really like. And so I do have a few. I've gotten a few from other DJs, and people in the public. I know we'll hear Alaska by Maggie Rogers. We'll hear an obscure jazz tune that was submitted by another DJ, Robert Sewell. I saw my physical therapist today, and he told me about a group called National Park Radio. I'm gonna check them out. Suzanne Santo. Also, of course, we just finished the Rock Ock Festival, so we'll hear from Yatsine, Nicholas Gallen, and from Sitka, from Whiskey Class, Liz Snyder and Patrick Troll, maybe Liz Snyder and Elephant Lars with the Wool Pullers, maybe some old Cook County Blues Band if we want to go local, and of course, I always play what I call your old favorites too. Sometimes we just kind of slip in a classic rock tune here and there.
Those all sound great. I can't wait to hear what everybody submits for their request. So that, again, that's Stormy Weather starting tonight, 9 p.m., KRNN 102.7 FM, online at krnn.org.
Well, KTO, and 103.1 in Juneau and Douglas, because we have two now.
Thank you so much for that reminder. That's the one I listen to now, actually, since I live downtown.
And also, I'm just absolutely thrilled that we have that nice resident FM sound back.
Yeah. Everyone is, myself included. Yeah. And also, KTOO has been involved in some truly spectacular music events held on the virtual stage in the past year, from Folk Fest to At Home with the Juno Symphony, and most recently to Rock Ock. So before we say goodbye today, what have been some of your favorite public radio moments of 2021? Trish, I'll start with you.
Oh my goodness, start with Katie first, please.
No, I will use this opportunity to I'm giving some praise. I'm bowing here to Trish for actually putting together a public radio program in her home. I just know that would drive me crazy. And so thank you so much, Trish, for doing that. You know, I would say just at, you know, witnessing Rock Auk over the weekend and going, wow, you know, this is rooted in public radio. Also interviewing and putting together a podcast on Aaron Heist. Hmm. Aaron Heist, who is done right now working on an album down in Oregon, who put together a really wonderful EP. I know that you interviewed her. Shelly did a fantastic interview with her and we're able to share her music. I'll probably play some of that tonight. So those are just a couple that come to mind.
Okay, for Trish, your turn.
For me, it was the Folk Fest. How it was done this year really captured the spirit of kind of all the stuff that went on stage when we are able to be there in person. So I thought that was really a greatly done this year.
Well, thanks so much to both of you for being here today, for being cheerleaders for public radio and for public media, and for helping us keep local voices on the air. I just can't say thank you enough. You volunteer your time and your energy, and it's a lot of effort, and we just so appreciate it. So I'm glad we were able to have a conversation on the air today and hear a little behind the scenes from both of you.
Thank you so much, Shelley, for all your support of volunteer DJs on KRNN and KXLL.
Yeah, we appreciate you.
Well, thanks again to both of you, and please keep up the good work. You're listening to Juno Afternoon. I'm Shelley Delaney. Well, my last guests today are here representing our local Arboretum. Welcome. I've got a couple of Pats with me today. Welcome, Pat White, president of the Friends of the Jensen Olsom Arboretum. Hi, Pat White.
Hi. Good afternoon.
And Pat Harris, a board member for Friends of the Jensen Olsom Arboretum. Hi, Pat Harris.
Hi there, Sherry.
Well, thank you both for being... it's all good. Thank you both for being here today. I just wanted to ask, how did the most recent season of the Arboretum wrap up this past year?
Well, we had 6,000 visitors given, you know, which is a little bit less than normal, but, you know, it's no cruise ship season and all that, but that's a fair amount. And we had delightful weather, really. I mean, though some people say it was kind of rainy, we had long periods of warm, sunny weather. So that makes for good flowers. And this was Ginger Hudson's, our new manager's, first season. So it all went really well.
And how is the new caretaker settling in?
Just fine. She had the coldest January, snowiest January on record, then the coldest May on record. So she's, you know, trial by fire, so to speak, or trial by rain, I would say. She's doing just fine.
Oh, I'm sure she's more than up to the challenge there. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Well, today you both wanted to come on the show to talk about the upcoming raffle. So tell us all about that and how we can participate.
Sure. This raffle is an annual event to raise money for particular projects. And so this year we decided to raise money for covering the potting area behind the garage. It's umbrellas is keeping everybody dry. But we wanted to pose a question for the raffle, and that is, what do gardeners do when they're not gardening? So we went about finding activities that gardeners like to do as prizes. So we have Eagle Crest multi-day pass. Mm-hmm. We have Gourmet Alaska, Art Such, Rain Tree Quilting. Salon Cedar has donated some products. So those are the things that, you know, gardeners like to do when they're not gardening. So those are the prizes. And the raffle is, like I said, an annual event. And they're $10 a ticket. And it's all online, of course, because that's the way things are these days. And it's at our website, which is friendsjoarboretum.org, friendsjoarboretum.org. And there's the tickets for sale there in our little store. And so the raffle goes on to about early December. So we hope to raise some money to build this potting area cover.
That's great. What do each of you like to do when you're not gardening?
I like to hike and ski. I play the piano. I practiced this afternoon.
How about you, Pat Harris?
I just got back from the garden, shoveling snow off my bed so I could do some last minute things. So I'm not quite into non-gardening mode yet.
Even with the snow, even in the snow, you're still gardening. Yeah. Well, Pat, what was your role in this raffle, in this event? Pat Harris? Yeah.
Pat Harris. I'm just basically support staff at this point. I used to be the president of Friends of the Arboretum, but Pat White has taken over. So I'm just helping her in every way I can, trying to sell tickets and promoting the raffle. So here we are.
Yeah, right. We also have merchandise, as many organizations do when you go online to buy a raffle ticket. We have note cards of Merrill Jensen, the former manager, put together some 12 photographs, four seasons, three pictures per season, and a nice package. We have ball caps. We have a field guide, which is a lovely an accompaniment to being in the garden. It's not all the plants of the garden, but it identifies features of each plant with great photographs. And it's a spiral bound small piece. So you can put it in your pocket or your backpack and carry it around. That's also available online.
Well, that sounds like something I would definitely use. Well, Pat White, Pat Harris, thanks for being here today. Remind me one more time how we can participate in the raffle or purchase a ticket.
You can purchase a ticket online at our website, friendsjoarboretum.org, $10 a piece. Buy early, buy often, buy them as Christmas gifts. They're great prizes. The prizes are all listed on the website, and we hope that we can raise enough money to build this thing. So thank you.
I hope so too. Good luck to you. Pat Harris, anything to add before we say goodbye?
No, thanks, Shelley. Thanks for having us on.
Thanks to both of you, to the Pats for being here today, and thanks for the work you do with Friends of the Jensen Olsen Arboretum. We all appreciate it.
Yeah, thank you.
Have a great afternoon.
See you later.